Hello, I'm Eleanor Hansen Wise.
And I'm Oliver Wise.
And we're speaking today with Stephanie Dean, the 10th artist for the Present Group. It's Wednesday, May 13th, and we're in our home in Oakland, California. And Stephanie is speaking to us from her home in Chicago, Illinois. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for talking with us today.
Hello, thank you.
I wanted to start off getting a little background from you. How did you get started working with photography?
I've basically been photographing as long as there's been a camera around, so probably high school. Whenever we could afford film, I would just use the camera and take photographs of my friends. But since I was studying painting, I would always make sure that the photographs were composed well, and I really thought about the photographs, also because we didn't have a lot of money for film. So every shot mattered. And then when I got into undergraduate, I studied painting. And during my first core class, part of the core curriculum at CCAC, I realized that studying painting was going to ruin my appreciation for painting. So I decided to take a break and took a photography class. And that's when I realized that photography was just so much better for me. It was a little bit quicker and a lot more reductive, taking from the world rather than adding things and putting things into the canvas, which oddly, I mean, now my work is more additive, but when I decided to become a photographer and pursue it as a course of study, I was really using more reductive methods.
How do you work? What's your process or your practice like?
It's kind of intuitive. Usually I get kind of frustrated and I feel like I should be doing something, and then I start buying things that I want to photograph, and then I buy, you know, some props depending on if I feel like I need a certain thing. And then I just devote a day or a day and a half to actually photographing. And my studio is in my basement, so I just spend a lot of time in the basement moving things around, photographing, re-refrigerating things, revitalizing things, spraying them with water. Sometimes I'll start with a color scheme in mind or something that I really, really want to portray. But usually I just get the feeling that I need to create something, and then whatever I think of first, I go and I get that thing. Like sometimes it's the flowers, most of the time it's the food, but sometimes it is a flower. So it's just kind of intuitive and spontaneous. But then once I get all the items into the studio, it's very methodical. I mean, I spend a lot of hours moving things around and cutting them properly, or, you know, just moving the labels, moving the light, of course, sitting and resting. And when I get tired of looking at stuff, sometimes in the middle of the shoot, I start to hate everything, you know, and then I have to take a step back and I look at anything that I just like to look at, from a photograph to a painting. I mean, anyone's paintings, like odd nerd rooms paintings, you know, I just go and I look at work that I enjoy looking at and break that. I don't know, I guess it's not really a wall. It's just kind of like that self-doubt that creeps in that I seriously think comes from graduate school. And then finally just plow through it until I feel like I've got as much as I can. And then I print a lot of test prints, and then I narrow down the image of the shoot, and then I just go with that. And then I go to the fine printing, and then the piece is done.
Has the analog versus digital divide been a issue for you?
Yes, it has. For most of my life, it was only an issue because I never had a lump sum of money to buy a digital camera. Mm-hmm. And then when I did get that money, I bought a digital camera, and I still have a lot of film, and I love using film. But now the film is more expensive, and it's just way more time. You know, I have to deliver it to a lab, have it processed, have it contact printed, whatever. Because I work with medium format, when I do use film. And digital, I like it, but it's really hard to keep up with Photoshop. There's so many new things and so many things that I don't technically need to know. I don't do a lot of manipulation at all. So, I try to keep my software updated. That's one of the things. I mean, the technology is just expensive. Sometimes it fails me. You know, I don't think I can go much bigger than I do right now with my prints, which are generally like 32 inches by 20 something. It's kind of an odd size. Hmm. Without getting pixelation. But the camera that I have, I've been lucky enough that people actually think that the photographs are 4x5. And I also think that's due to the printing house that I use, and I do use the Hanamuel paper, and I really love it. But I'm over the whole conceptual argument. You know, I love film. I would love to use it, but I just don't want to play that anymore. I've been an art school like my entire life. I've heard it all. I've said it all. I've been on both sides. I just want to make art, and I just want to do it efficiently and effectively. And right now, for me, that's using my Nikon, my D200.
It may surprise some of our subscribers to learn that much of your past work is portraiture, especially of men and the different states of boys and men in their own worlds. Is the male world something that especially fascinates you?
Yes, it does. There's a song, I think it's a really old song by Book of Love called, I think it's called I'm Not a Boy. But there's something that I'll never understand about men because I'm not a man, and that's always fascinated me, like the whole, you know, heterosexual males and how they get along with each other. It's very interesting, and it's something I will never experience with a man since I'm a woman. But also, it's just really hard for me, especially as a straight woman, especially when I was single as well and dating, trying to figure out how mature someone was. You know, I mean, it would take a while for me to figure out, you know, is this guy really up to my level? You know, I mean, because sometimes they'll say that they never want to grow up. I mean, most men are hesitant. Most males are hesitant to call themselves men. Hmm. And I don't know any single woman that would ever say, I'm still a girl, with a serious face. Like, oh, no, I'm not a woman. I'm a girl. You know, I mean, no one would. I don't know any woman that would say that, really.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, in a serious context. So I was fascinated by that. And also just being a woman and wanting to look at images, men have it really, really well. There's a lot of images of women from porn to paintings, you know, fine art, low art, kitsch, whatever. Men get to look at women, and women never really get to look at men at all. And I love to use the example of Brad Pitt and like some of his past movies. Like, I don't find him very attractive, but a lot of people do, and in a lot of the Ocean's movies, you know, that whole series, he's often eating or, you know, eating while talking or blocking his face. And we don't have, like, the traditional beefcake anymore at all. We have nothing to look at. We really don't. So for me, it was just like, why not take pictures of men? And then coming from California, in a very liberal setting, you know, the Bay Area, California College of Arts and Crafts, a lot of women were taking photographs of women or painting women and saying things about women and being very feminist in that sense. But this just doesn't interest me. I just don't really get along with women. I don't want to look at women. I am a woman. I'm okay with being a woman the way that I am. I wanted to look at men, and I wanted to know more about their world. And there's nothing really as a consumer of images of any kind for me to look at. Like, if there's images of men out there that are erotic, they were created by men for men. You know,
that's true.
So, I mean, my goal wasn't to eroticize these men at all. It was just to look at men and to kind of create a portrait of men / boys, and when do they really become men?
Did you?
That's the thinking on that.
Yeah.
I still have very strong feelings on that.
Did you have any trouble getting access to these male worlds that you sort of were able to enter and capture?
I did sometimes. It took a lot of convincing. There's one guy that I really wanted to take a photo of. I drove past this oil changing shop, and this guy was standing there. I mean, a very masculine pose. Turns out this guy was an ex-felon for something he wouldn't even tell me about. And it took me 3 different times of going back to him saying, look, I really want to photograph you. He's like, why do you want to photograph me? And I'm just like, I'm just doing this thesis. Well, he'd never heard of a thesis, whatever. So that took a little bit of explaining. But he was just really uncomfortable with being looked at.
Yeah.
And also him being an ex-felon, he's like, but what if I'm wanted? And I was just like, well, they already have your picture then. You know, so another picture of you is not going to be an issue. I'm like, I'm going to show it at school. If I sell one, I'll give you a cut, whatever you want. I just, you have a very specific masculine look that's, it was very now, it's still very now, but it's also very old school masculine. The way he was standing, he was smoking a cigarette, he had oil on him, he was doing a very male job. You know, I mean, it took a lot of convincing, and then some guys thought they were okay with it, and then were really uncomfortable in front of the camera. Like, they thought that they could do it, but then for some reason, when faced with the camera and me photographing them, they would become visibly uncomfortable. And I don't know, I have no idea where that comes from. I think that would have to be taken on a case-by-case basis.
Sure.
And other ones, obviously, like, when I was younger and thinner and I was taking photographs, they thought they were going to get something else out of it. Mm-hmm. And it was very clear that that's what they thought. But I was just like, well, this is the only way I can get this shot. You know, I'll take the shot. I mean, I didn't do anything. They never, like, tried to kiss me or anything. Well, one guy did, but it was like, no. I'm leaving now, you know. But, I mean, it was just a really interesting situation.
In your Sleeping Men series, did the people always know?
Well, it started out, like, the majority of them, when I began the series, were not set up at all. I mean, that's how the series started. Just men sleep in public all the time. I don't see any woman doing it unless she's really tired, I guess, or has no other choice, or drunk, or under the influence of something. But that's how it started. Is just, I noticed that men are always sleeping in public, and I always have a camera, so I take a photo, because it's just funny for me. Then, you know, there was a couple times where I didn't have a camera, or ran out of film or whatever, and I wanted to reenact the scene. So then I did some reenactments. But the funny thing about, even when I was doing the reenactments or having, like, staging scenes, they would always fall asleep during the shoot. Because they're perfectly asleep. They're comfortable with sleeping anyways, and they would always fall asleep, which is great because they're technically sleeping and it's more realistic, whatever. And I'm kind of a purist at heart, but it was just really strange. And then a lot of the men actually, they thought it was just funny and, oh yeah, whatever, photograph me sleeping, that's easy. But they didn't really think about how women don't have that luxury. It is kind of like a luxury. We just can't fall asleep on the train. Like, would you fall asleep on the BART? I don't think so. Never, 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 never. You know? I mean, on the plane is one thing, but in public, no. No. And a lot of guys just don't think about it. And so we had some very interesting conversations, my models and myself, that a lot of men don't know that they were photographed. And, you know, they were in public, so it doesn't matter. I don't need to tell them. I'm not bound by law to tell them.
Leave a little note in their arm. You have been photographed while sleeping. Anyway, I wanted to move on to your the piece that you made for the present group. It's part of your Modern Grocery series, and I just wanted to ask you to talk about this series a little bit.
Okay. It's a new series. It took me... Someone asked me how I thought about it, how I came up with the idea, and it wasn't one big aha moment, because I'm not lucky enough to have those. It was just kind of like a frustration. I just thought it was really absurd that everything that we eat is labeled, you know, and that people don't know what kind of apples are what, or, you know, this is a English cucumber versus a whatever cucumber, and that every single apple has to be labeled, or every single cucumber has to be labeled or individually wrapped. So I thought that that was absurd. I had already had a lot of solo shows, or just a lot of shows of sleeping men, and I wasn't getting any new, you know, magnum opus style pieces. So I felt like I was kind of in a dead zone. So I was reading and thinking and looking at images. And whenever I'm really dry, like in a dry spell, I look at painting. And I went back and I looked at, you know, the Dutch still life, the masters. And I thought, well, these are really beautiful. And wow, look at the food and everything's so natural. And they don't have all of this plastic packaging. And so then that thought combined with the other thought of our stuff is so absurd. And I was like, well, why don't I just try to, you know, just photograph our food for what it is. First of all, this is what it looks like. This is how we buy it, you know, for better or for worse. But placing it in that historical context will make people realize just how absurd it is, but also how lucky we are that we can just go to the store and buy these things. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, in Dutch still life, people could afford the painting, but they couldn't afford what was in the painting. Mm-hmm. But also there, we're talking about, you know, the expensive Romers or those glasses or china plates and all that kind of stuff. But now everyone can afford what's in the painting, but or the photograph, but they can't afford the photograph because the art is so expensive. I mean, just to make, people complain about my prices, and a lot of people say that it depends. I mean, artists, some of them are like, your prices are too low, and I was like, well, you know, I want to sell. And then people who are really out of touch yet also make art but don't show as much, they think that the prices are really way too expensive. But people don't really understand how much it costs to make art. Even if my costs are lower because I'm using digital means, it still costs a lot of money to make a fine print and to use Photoshop. And, you know, it's time, it's money, it's it's framing, basically. So that's how it came to be. And I just think that also this whole idea of commerce, that the final piece itself is more expensive than what's in the piece, is very significant in the context of why those paintings were in proliferation in the first place. Because people would buy a Dutch still life painting, because they couldn't afford the things that were in the painting, so they put up a painting. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now it's just really interesting.
Is there a difference working with people and working with food? Do you miss it at all working with people, or is it satisfying having the total control?
I miss working with people. I still do work with people. Not as much. I can't justify it anymore. It's hard with a husband to say, oh yeah, I want to go photograph that man. I mean, it's just, it's hard. I won't lie about that. But I love working with people, but also, you know, there is that total control with food. But it gets lonely, it really does. So I like to put on the comedy and or NPR or whatever. I need to listen to something and I need to sing. But I can't, like, enjoy a glass of wine with my models. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the shoot, like, it's just me and the food. I'm a pretty social person, so I do miss working with people, but I do like that control. And also with people, they bring their own ideas and their own compositions and their own color schemes and their own tempo to the shoot, where you know, it's all me in the studio. And if I'm having a bad day and I'm just not that smart and not that creative that day, like, it's rough. It's really hard because I can't ask the Apple, you know, what would you do? Or do you have any ideas? Or do you want to change outfits? You know what I mean? It's just not...
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
But when I do get it right, it's super satisfying. But then, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, it's nice when you get, like, a really great portrait that the sitter really likes, which is way more impossible than most people realize.
Mm-hmm.
I guess women understand that with wedding photos, you know, it's just really hard to look good. But, yeah, I miss people.
How often do you get to spend some time going out and looking at art?
Not enough. I don't have that many favorite galleries per se. A lot of times I get really frustrated. I like to look at the old masters. When I go and look at art, it's usually because I'm desperate. I want to see something that's really satisfying for me on a soul level. I do get into the moods where I want to see the new. I want to meet my peers. I want to go out there and I want to get new ideas, but I know myself well enough to realize that, like, I'm not going to be inspired by some of my peers that are doing great work. It's not going to do anything for me. And right now my time is a little, I need to gear up to teach. I've got a lot of things to do, so I don't get to look as much art as I want and probably as I should.
What do you think about the art scene in Chicago?
I like it because there's so many different cliques. It's a huge art scene. There's a lot of different areas. It's a very do-it-yourself culture. It's very political, but in a very different way than California was. People have their own agendas, and they're very community-oriented. But I've never been one to really fall into any community on any level in any way of my life. So I don't really have good friends that are like mentors or comrades in arms that are artists. But I do feel that we have a really great community here that I'm super proud of, that I just really enjoy being a part of, even if I'm not an active member that, like, you know, I don't get really interviewed here. People don't really know me. They're always surprised when I actually have a show, whereas other people are just like, oh, yeah, of course so-and-so is having a show. And I'm always surprised when people show up for my shows. But, you know, and I will say this. I think that as with fashion and music, a lot of stuff that started in California or that was present in California when I still lived there, it took a while to get here. And now it's here, and it's just like, I'm ready to move on. But Chicago is still working through it and making their own take on it. So that's kind of interesting. And the other thing is, we don't have graffiti here. We have graffiti, but spray paint's illegal. So there's a lot of things that are very different. I can't even describe. I can't say how, but we don't. You have to go to the suburbs to get spray paint, so there's just not as much graffiti. So we're missing a major aspect of, like, how I understand art here. Mm-hmm. So people really, really, really love graffiti art here, but we don't really have anyone making it.
Wow.
Like, we have sticker art and underground stuff, and I'm sure there's a whole bunch of stuff out there that I just don't know about. But on the surface level, you know, just being a pedestrian, there's nothing.
Wow.
Yeah, it's weird.
What are your thoughts about how the economy has affected artists in your area?
Oh, the gallery that I showed at closed. I was part of the last show. It hasn't really affected me that much because I never sell that much, and I don't bet on selling things. Like, I don't. That's just not part of my budget. I never assume that anything's going to sell. I just don't build that into making art, you know. But it's hit a lot of people really hard. Galleries are going under. grants are getting, not more people are applying for them, of course. There's just more and more artists anyways every year. And grants are just being lowered. You know, I applied for a $1,000 grant, got an $800 grant. And it was accompanied by a letter that said we weren't able to do this and that, blah, 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 apologies. It's just hard. It's really hard. And a lot of people aren't selling as much. Actually, people that actually were selling a lot of things, like my friend Matt Sieber, he shows in Europe a lot. And he came back from Germany, this is like 2 months ago, and he was really upset because he didn't sell anything. And that's like a typical show for me. I don't sell anything. But he was upset because he didn't sell anything. And he normally sells at least, you know, 2 to 3 pieces. So It is affecting everyone. But a lot of people that are on that level are also teaching. Mm-hmm. And people are going back to school. So, I mean, there's a little bit of hope. But that's not the same as having galleries to go to and sell through.
Right. You've taught photography at Columbia College in Chicago and Oakton Community College. As a teacher, what do you find yourself trying to impress on your students?
I like to teach history of photography. The reason why I didn't take the class is because they think that history of photography is going to be an easy class. And I like to teach them that photography has a history, and it is part of the way that we see history. And it often makes history. So I want students to look at photographs and realize that they have historical significance and that there is a person holding the camera, usually. So much anymore. And then it's a human endeavor, and that I try to bring it back to, like, all the photos of Vietnam. Like, we don't see photographs of the Iraq War. We really don't, compared to Vietnam. I like to remind them that photography has a very human element, and it's not just snapshots, and it's not just a throwaway class. It is ingrained in our history. Our history is mostly told through photographs now. Mm-hmm. That's what I try to give them. And as far as teaching photography in the lab, I just try to let them be themselves and just let them photograph what they're interested in and not try to judge them because of what I went through art school and grad school and the judgment of your choice of subject matter. I've just had it with that. You know, that's not something you should be teaching in an intro to Photo 1 class at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. It was fun.
Thank you.